Mark Hrabowski joins us on Sports Byline USA. He has written a book that I want to recommend to everybody. It's called Howard Cosell, The Man, Myth, and the Transformation of American Sports. And, of course, during the 60s, 70s, and into the 80s, Howard Cosell was the man when it came to American sports casting. And, Mark, I guess the first question I have to ask you is, how hard was it to write this book about the man, Howard Cosell?
Well, it's 500 pages, and I think it could have gone either 1,000 or 1,500, and I still would be scratching the surface. That's how complicated, complex, and nuanced a man he was. See, we never knew that growing up watching him. We thought he was, you know, they tell it like it is, and it was basically, you know, a brash, opinionated guy who thought he knew it all. But in truth, he was probably the most insecure man in television, which, you know, conflicted with his image of, you know, being Mr. Know-it-all. He didn't know it all, and he always thought that he might not have a job the next morning. He was that insecure about his work. And that's the thing that surprised me the most. And everybody says it. Everybody knew him. The first thing they say is Howard was just so insecure. We had to constantly reassure him that he was his job was safe and that he did a great job on Monday Night Football the night before. So that's pretty surprising. But then again, geniuses are that way, aren't they? They're very rarely grounded, stable people, and certainly Cosell was not.
There was no middle ground about him. You're absolutely right about that. You either loved him or you hated him, and I suppose it all goes back to his roots to some degree. Tell me a little bit about those roots.
Yeah, in fact, it does trace back to that, because that's another thing that surprised me. His early years in Brooklyn were no day at the beach. I mean, he had a very tempestuous relationship with his mother and father. His father was a traveling accountant who was very rarely home. Cosell almost never saw him. And when he was away, his mother would actually step out on him. She would have affairs. And this would be in direct sight of Cosell and his brother. So it was a very unhappy childhood with a lot of conflicting emotions. And I really think that the whole ignition in Howard Cosell was trying to prove to his father that he was a better man than his father was. It's a very delicate thing. I had to really tiptoe writing it, because, you know, I wanted to get the story correct. But it's not a happy story about the childhood. But then again, that's again what geniuses always have. That they always have that key in the ignition that usually stems from something unhappy, and that's what drove Howard Cosell to his obsessions.
One of the things that I've always learned, Mark, is the fact that when kids have to deal with something, particularly either racial discrimination or, in this particular case, anti-Semitism, that it really marks them one way or another. It either drives them to greatness or it makes them insecure. I'm assuming it's the latter rather than the former with him.
It was both, because he really did hit the heights, and he knew exactly what he was doing. He had a battle plan. He had to go up against the mighty walls of anti-Semitism in television in the 50s and early 60s. It was such an unlikely story, because by the time he got his break, he was like in his 40s. He was no day at the beach, you know. He was no matinee idol. He had that, you know, the long nose and the Brooklyn Jewish kind of inflection to his voice, the nasal whine and everything like that. And it was not an easy thing. Yes, there was anti-Semitism, but Cosell, while he would rail against anti-Semitism, never really squared in his own life what being a Jew was. He always had that ambivalence. He was never bar mitzvahed. He had that whole thing with the family name, because people assume that a lot of people know that he was Howard Cohen before he was Howard Cosell, but they assume that he changed it to sound less Jewish, when in fact he took back the original family name, which was Cosell. People didn't know that. Yet at the same time, he never could resolve what Judaism meant to him. It wasn't until the 1972 tragic Munich Olympics, with the slaughter of the with the Israeli athletes being slaughtered by the terrorists, that he thought he had found himself. But even then, he never did. And that was one of the great mysteries of his life, as you'll see in the book.
Mark, what did you find was the driving force for his acerbic style?
I just think he was always that way. He was always imperious. He was always looking down his nose at people. He was always, trying to pull rank in intellect and so on and so forth. It wasn't really even a shtick on his part. It wasn't even an act, because before he was famous, he was the exact same way that we saw him on the air. He was just that way, and I think he just felt if he was ever going to make it in that business, he had to be true to who he was, and he certainly was. I mean, he was a guy who looked for importance, not just to make it in the business, but importance. And we certainly can say, looking back, that he left that stamp on society, can't we?
Was he a practicing attorney?
Yes, he was actually a partner at a very prestigious law firm in Lower Manhattan called Marrow Pomper Cosell. He was a labor lawyer. He had been an editor of the NYU Law Review. He had gotten his law degree in 4 years at NYU. So he was really a terrific lawyer. But he only acceded to become a lawyer because of his father's wishes. His father had scrimped and saved every penny to send him through law school, so he felt he owed it to him to do that. But once he got out, even though he was a successful lawyer, he was always looking to become a broadcaster. He just had this impossible dream. It was deep inside him. He never could shake it, no matter what the conditions were with anti-Semitism and how many rejections he got. He always kept going. So he had that battle plan, and he kept to it, and you got to give him a lot of credit for that.
Where did that early broadcasting break come from?
It just happened to be the network that he was with for his whole life. ABC noticed him when he was actually working as a lawyer and as an ad hoc financial advisor to baseball players, like the Giants and Dodgers of that era and the Yankees. He would do this pro bono. He would befriend these athletes like Willie Mays and Monty Irvin and Phil Rizzuto, and give them sort of, you know, if you look back and you can make the case that Cosell was actually the first sports agent, or even though it was an unofficial thing that he was doing. In effect, his plan was to use these athletes to get attention, which he did. He was in the pages of the Sporting News and New Yorker magazine for his work with these players. And then eventually the ABC network came to him and said, why don't we do this TV show, which was a bunch of kids on a panel asking questions of athletes. And it got a lot of attention because the kids would ask questions, better questions than the sports writers of the era did. And it was for a reason, because Cosell wrote all the questions. But he got attention through that. Eventually, he got a sports talk show in New York, on the radio in New York. He began producing ABC Radio's network's boxing broadcasts, and that was what led him, of course, to Muhammad Ali, which was when he really broke out in the public.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that came about in 1962, and really, invariably, I was not surprised to learn that it was that relationship between the two, which was kind of a strange relationship. Here you had an African-American, but here you had a white Jewish lawyer. But if you think about the roads that both of them had to travel in the early parts of their life, it really did bring them together, and it was a natural fit, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the strangest buddy act I've ever seen, but it was also the most perfect buddy act I've ever seen, because you couldn't have two more opposite people mesh any better than those two did. And they realized it. I mean, they knew the marketing upside of forming a relationship like that. Both very brilliant marketers and self-promoters, and also very talented people. So they realized what was going on. In fact, Cosell had been very close to Floyd Patterson before Cassius Clay came along. And then when Clay came along, he basically dumped Patterson because he knew the upside of teaming up with Cassius Clay. And those two had a relationship for years and years. It was never as close as Cosell wanted people to believe, because Ali was not a guy to get close. You could get close to, but they both understood how important they were to each other.
Also, when you think about the Ali Cosell relationship and his defense of Ali when he refused to be inducted into the Army, did he ever give any consideration about that defense by maybe blowing up in his face and hurting his broadcasting career?
I don't think he cared. I think he saw it as a moral imperative. It was something he had to take a principal stand on. I still believe that was the bravest single performance, the bravest thing any sports journalist has ever done. And he had to be very careful when he did it, because he was working for a big corporation, ABC. He couldn't just come on and t- take Ali's side without giving all kinds of reasons, but the most important being that Ali was denied his constitutional rights under the Constitution of due process. And he made that argument so strongly that it was actually the argument that Ali prevailed on in the end. But at the time when he did that, there was nobody in sports and very few people in journalism, period, who could have made the case the way Cosell did with his lawyer's knowledge of it.
Mark Hrabowski is with us. We're talking about Howard Cosell. His book is called Howard Cosell, The Man, the Myth, and the Transformation of American Sports. And if Muhammad Ali and his relationship with Muhammad was the thing that really carried and rocketed his relationship with sports to another level, it was another event in 1970 that did so as well. And we'll talk about that when we continue on Sports Byline.